WDIY presents Lehigh Valley Art Salon, showcasing the arts in every form. WDIY Lehigh Valley Public Radio is proud to welcome back Daniel Roebuck. Danny is a native of Bethlehem and a successful character actor with a 35-year career on stage and screen. He recently sat down for a one-to-one with me to talk about his past, present, and future projects here in the Lehigh Valley. Welcome back to the Lehigh Valley, Danny. You're originally from the area and a Bethlehem Catholic alumnus. How had growing up in the Lehigh Valley shaped you as an actor?
Well, you know, it's funny being on a one-to-one program with you, James, because, you know, actors have such a, you know, they have so many people living inside them. So I'm going to try to just channel this one so that it is one-to-one. Look. I love the Lehigh Valley, and growing up in the Lehigh Valley, it's hard to explain what it is about this place that makes it perfect, but one of the things that makes it perfect are the people. We have such an extraordinary, wide-ranging, diverse, opinionated people, but you know what they love? The art. They love art. Theaters, concerts, art, just art's presented everywhere. We've got great museums. We've got great opportunities for people to view and see art and great opportunities for artists to create art. And that's not true. I've traveled all over the world. That's not true of every place in the world. And I wonder if it's because of the deep, this is a good question someone should ask. The roots of the Lehigh Valley are both deep, you know, through the Moravian settlement, but it's also, this has been one of the perfect melting pots here, especially we're speaking from this studio of yours on the south side. Mm-hmm. People of all different nationalities and faiths came together. They built the steel that built America. There's a pride in that. We just have so many diverse people that I think it's made us a better people.
How did you get into acting, and then how did that take you to L.A. and describe your beginnings there?
Oh, well, I mean, honestly, so as a child, I was a ventriloquist, then I was an impressionist, and then I was a clown in a circus. I toured in a circus for two seasons as a 12-year-old clown, certainly one of the youngest clowns in America. And then I was a magician, and then I walked into this Boyd Theater. Everybody here in town remembers the Boyd, and they were playing Give 'Em Hell, Harry, which was a one-man show where Harry Truman was played by James Whitmore, and I walked into the theater, a performer, you know, an entertainer, and I walked out an actor. I thought, that's what I want to do. And so I did it. I mean, very soon after, I auditioned for my first play. I walked into the Pennsylvania Playhouse. My mother had to take me. I was 13 years old. Thank you, Mom. And you know, the janitor was in there, and, you know, we said, well, there's a play audition. He goes, yeah, just go in that room over there. And then, you know, I thought, well, it's a nice janitor. Boy, nice. And then the janitor came into the room where we were all waiting to audition. And he said, I'm the director, Hunt Matthews. And I look back. I always say that's everything I needed to know about community theater right there. You know, you're going to clean up and you're going to act, you know, but there's a price to pay. So, I just always knew I was going to be on TV. I always knew it. So there was a point where I had to go to where they made TV. And after doing many, many plays, some with, you know, the great Neil Heaver, who's a mutual friend of ours, mm-hmm. did many plays and then just went to Los Angeles. Because I don't think I'm a better actor than other people. I'm sure I'm not a better actor than other people. I'm certainly not smarter than other people. But what I am is intuitive. And it's so funny how people have a dream, whatever their dream is, and sometimes their dream requires something they don't want to do. Sometimes it requires schooling. Sometimes, and people say, I don't want to go to school all those years, so I won't do my dream. And in my case, it required geography. I could not become a movie star in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, although many years later, Maddie Dundon did become a movie star in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, when I put her in Getting Grace. Mm-hmm. But there was no me around then, so I had to go to where the movies were.
Any highlights from your early work that you feel were most rewarding?
Oh, well, you know, look, I got pretty lucky from the outset. And even my first movie was Cave Girl, Cave Girl. I'm sure the NPR listeners all have that on their shelves. Cave Girl was a teenage sex comedy and it didn't have any teenagers in it, and there was no sex at all, and it wasn't funny. So it was a triple threat. But
Instant success.
Instant success. But, you know, here's the thing. I was in Pennsylvania on January 19th of 1984. I left January 20th of 1984. And I was starring in Cave Girl in about October 1st of 1984. So, you know, that's pretty lucky.
Yeah.
And that was my first film audition. But, you know, the movie's terrible. Hopefully isn't mostly my fault, but what it was, you know, released, James, all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
They four-walled it. That means they, you know, they get like 30 prints and they send them all to the Texas area. Then they send them all to the Alabama area. Then they send them all here in the great Lehigh Valley.
Mm-hmm.
It was the film that closed down the Union Boulevard drive-in. It was the last film to play there.
Hmm.
Often driving through Allentown, someone might recognize me and, you know,
blame
make
me for
a
them.
Comment about that. You rotten, no good. Look, it was a blessing that I was there, and it led me to a position to find a manager or agent who were very reliable. And in fact, that same manager that took me on right after seeing Cave Girl, that company, remains in my family 36 years later. It never happens in Hollywood, but the same people help me work. I'm sorry if this sounds boring. I don't want to be boring.
No, you're good.
Oh, thank you, James. But what I'd say one of the really great blessings right away, man, was getting right from Cave Girl into River's Edge. So there I was with Dennis Hopper, an actor I knew and admired, a director I admired. There I was, like working with a master.
Mm-hmm.
That's
Neil Haver's favorite movie, by the way.
Oh, Neil likes that one?
Yes.
Oh, that's nice. Let me just... Neil, you got button bottles. That was my Dennis Hopper impression. I got so good at Dennis Hopper that I would stand, you know, behind the craft service guy. That's the guy, you know, and I'd say, "Hey, Frank, can I have a cup of coffee?" And then I'd watch as he took Dennis' coffee. What? I didn't want coffee. That was my childish fun. But can you imagine how I look back? What's funny is, you know, I think Dennis, he came to the set. He was the wise old man. He was like Gandalf. He was, you know, he knew everything. He had done every drug, which I still haven't done to this day. He had three lives before I met him. And now I realize that he was 4 years younger than I am right now. And that's depressing.
Mm. Well, how has networking helped you grow your career for those who are trying to potentially consider acting?
Hey, you know what? That's a good question, and I'm writing a book called "The Audition Is the Job" and other truths that I've learned in the land of make believe. And guess what? There's a chapter in the book called "Networking Equals Not Working." Now, we are in this glorious world by divine grace, as I see it, and you've given me a microphone, so I get to say what I think.
Mm-hmm.
God is good and God is real. You know, we're all here working in communion. That's the point. The point isn't to get ahead. The point is to help each other get ahead. Now, I think that the idea of networking, which has become so second nature, and, you know, that term thrown out so often, you know, I think that it's kind of it's an upturning of the point. The point is that people come to me and they say, "Can you help me?" And I do what I can to help them. It's not that I go to people and say, "Help me," and insist that they do what they can to help me. You see what I mean?
Right.
The difference is, it's like, who do I want? The government to take my money and give it to, you know, people less fortunate than me?
Mm-hmm.
Or do I want to just take my money and give it to people less fortunate than me? I like that method better.
And we have the choice.
Yeah. So, The whole thing about networking, I just think it perverts God's plan. And God's plan is that you should just help each other and not have a demand to be helped. Because in Hollywood, you know, I'm what am I going to do? I'm going to become friends with someone for the sole purpose that they would hire me in something? Well, what kind of friendship is that? It's a grossness.
Mm-hmm.
Conversely, I have deep, long friendships with some of the greatest people in the world, actors of all levels of success. And, you know, when I make a movie, guess what? I use them because they're my friends. We didn't network that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
We grew it through mutual respect and a mutual appreciation and not a demand for something. Anyway, so did network help me? You know, I mostly don't network. I mostly mentor. And I feel like I'm a better channel of peace myself if I am helping others as best I can.
Can you tell us how you met your wife, Tammy?
Well, Tammy, gosh, that's such a crazy story. So this guy, Ian Stevens, asked me to come to a film expo in Tampa, Florida. The only problem is it was 2010 and the film expo was in 2013. And I was like, sure, fine. I'll do it. I knew the guy, met him in the theater, by the way. Met him in the theater, didn't network him, just we met doing a play called No Time for Sergeants 30 years earlier. And so I said yes, but then when that time came up, well, I worked pretty steady and I was very lucky. I was in a series called Mob City on TNT. And when you work as a series regular, you work, generally they push the schedule, so you're working all night Friday until, you know, sometimes 5, 6 in the morning. Then you got to be there Monday morning because they got to get all the night shots. So I realized I was working that week, and I had to work Friday, and I had to work Monday. And I said, there's no way I can get to your thing. I'm sorry. And the guy, made a plea, which was a very heartfelt plea. He convinced me to work all night, go home, take a quick shower, fly to Tampa, go to some event. Next morning, I gave a talk about how I mentor. Then I got right back on a plane so I could be back in L.A. in time. And in that 17 hours, I met the woman who became my wife. Lesson number one, there was a thing that I said I would do, then I couldn't do, then I was asked to reconsider because it was, you know, emotionally important to a third person who I knew, but he wasn't like a great friend. He was a longtime acquaintance. And then I did what I felt was the right thing to do. I honored what he asked me to do. And then what did I get out of it? A wife, two beautiful stepchildren, you know, the rest of my life, a producing partner in my work. I mean, it's just been a very extraordinary time. And all of that, you know, so all of that dates back to I went and did a play 30 years earlier, 36 years ago. And if I hadn't done the play, I hadn't met the guy. I wouldn't have met the guy. The guy wouldn't have brought me down. I wouldn't have the wife I have.
It's amazing how you can trace it all back.
You can go all the way back.
Is your faith a driving force behind your nonprofit production company, A Channel of Peace?
Absolutely. Well, most assuredly. A Channel of Peace, and people can go to channelofpeace.org to see it, or they could go to thehailmaryfilm.com. Either they can be led back to one another or follow us on Facebook. So the idea with A Channel of Peace is I had this great epiphany during Getting Grace. So I made this movie, and I didn't set out, you know, to be like, I'm going to make a movie that's going to change people's lives. Because then you're a jerk. You know what I mean? Then you have hubris, and you have something that God doesn't want you to have, and that is extraordinary self-love. Mm-hmm. You have to have some it's a weird thing to do what I do. You do have to have some temerity because you have to believe that you could be someone else, mm-hmm. and convincingly. And so you've already kind of, you're pushing the limits of, you know, your self-love there. We made this movie, and this movie has had an extraordinary effect. And I could say almost daily, weekly, certainly, often, I get texts, I get emails, I get people who stop me on the streets, be it in Lehigh Valley or wherever I am, and they say, hey, Getting Grace, I saw Getting Grace. Do you know, I just lost my daughter, my brother, my sister, my father, and your movie made it easier for me. You know, what? Really? I know that hospitals now are using it as a tool to move people into the hospice situation. I'm the palliative care spokesperson, by the way, for St. Luke's, and I'm very proud that grew out of the movie, because palliative care is not about dying; it's about living the way you want to live till mm-hmm. you don't live anymore. Anyway, that movie has had such a great impact on people, strangers all over the world. All right, so beyond that, we took the movie And we use it to raise money. We go to, we partner generally with funeral homes, sometimes with hospices, and we raise money for hospice care, for cancer research, for, you know, cancer patients. We've used this movie as a tool to, I think and hope, make the world better. And so that is my idea with A Channel of Peace. We're going to make faithful family movies that will entertain people through a prism of solving your problems with the help of a higher power. Mm-hmm. Not a Christian power specifically, Jewish power, Muslim power, a higher power. And the other thing that I got out of Getting Grace is we showed that movie, and I can tell you, and you can tell often sometimes how people are dressed, and often sometimes where I was, I knew that Mormons were seeing it, Muslims were seeing it, Catholics were seeing it, Jewish people were seeing it.
It really had a universal appeal.
Yeah, evangelicals, and they all came out of the same story. It's, you know, like, I'm a Catholic, but I can, the faith aspects of Schindler's List is completely not lost on me, and the strength and the courage the people had to sustain themselves through that extraordinarily terrible situation, I could view their faith with regard and respect. Mm-hmm. So we want to be very ecumenical. The next movie, The Hail Mary, is set in a Catholic school. So the message would be, you know, it's a story of redemption, you know, through the prism of a Christian approach. But, you know, certainly everybody can see it and go, I recognize that I need the higher power to get to where I am. My higher power serves just as good as their higher power. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm trying for.
With Getting Grace, how has the movie affected others that work in hospice as well as funeral director positions?
I think Getting Grace did very well by funeral directors, and I know that for a fact because, do you know now, I don't know, people may not know this, I'm actually a funeral director.
Yeah.
I've received an honorary funeral director's degree, so crazy, from the Pittsburgh Institute of Mortuary Science, and it says funeral director embalmer. They told me, and I mean six times, while they were handing it to me, like, just the, you're not allowed to embalm. You're really not allowed to embalm. You can't embalm, which is a bummer because I thought, you know, as an actor, it's,
this is the coolest part of the job.
Yeah, and it's always good to have something else you can make money with. So I'm not really allowed to embalm, but the funeral directors love that movie because, let me tell you something about funeral directors. Now, I've met them all over the country, mm-hmm. at Canada, and will all over the world eventually, and they are hardworking, civic-minded, faithful members of communities everywhere. And what they do, folks, nobody wants to do, but they do it. It is a service, and it is a service for their community. And they just, I can't say nobody wants to do it. They do love what they do, but it's a, you know, it's a hard job. Mm-hmm. The wedding coordinator gets to be there, you know, at the happiest day of somebody's life. The funeral director has to be there at the saddest moment for a person. Mm. And they have to understand the psychology of the situation so clearly. And everybody mourns a different way, and they have to kind of figure that out right away. And then they put on the second biggest event of your life, not in 2 years like the wedding planner, but in 2 days sometimes. And that's a lot to do. Mm-hmm. In some faiths, it's immediately. Mm-hmm. You know, it's within 24 hours. So they serve their communities. They serve all their faiths. I love them. They're great. They're just great. We had such help here in the Lehigh Valley from the Heron Cell Funeral Organization. Dimitri and Paula are great friends and great partners. And it was, you know, their insight that helped make my character, Bill, so real. So I have great gratitude for them.
No, you'd mentioned it earlier, the Hail Mary. That's your next project. Can you tell us a little bit more about how that'll affect the area?
Oh, well, I hope we affect the area very well with the Hail Mary in the first place. Just as I did with Getting Grace, I'm going to cast from the area. I'm going to build my school football team from kids here in the Lehigh Valley. And when I say kids, I mean 19-year-olds, 18-plus, really, to play younger. People can go to thehailmaryfilm.com, and they could hit the Get Involved button, and it'll tell the roles we're looking for. We're looking for kids and women. Unfortunately, I have to, every time I meet a guy my age, they're like, I really want to be in that movie. And I go, you really can't play a nun, and you really can't play a teenage boy.
Yeah.
And so
know your limits.
Yeah, know your limits. Know your limits. I keep reaching for the sky because nobody tells me I can't.
Well, you've already been there, in my opinion. But
oh, thank you. You know what? Can I say something about that? I had this a new analogy. May I?
Please.
So, you know, life to me is kind of like, you know, July 20th, 1969. Like, they knew, everybody says to the moon. It was never to the moon. It was to the moon and back, moon and back. Because, you know, they thought, well, we could get a guy there, but we got to get him back. You know what I mean? What that really meant was they had to get from here to the orbit of the moon, orbit of the moon, onto the moon, back to the orbit of the moon, and then back. So I see my life as like this. I'm in my late 50s, although I know I look younger. but I've been to the moon. I got the moon. I've been to the orbit of the moon. Then I went to the moon. I got the moon rocks. And now I'm on my descent. I have what, 50 more years left? I just said that because God might be listening, and you know, he might think, oh, okay, that's the number he likes.
Note to self.
Note to self. You never know. But whatever I have left, you know, that's my descent into, you know, a greater glory eventually. So I am in this mood to fill that time with as much positivity as I can. I love everything that this world offers, and I want to make sure everybody knows that, you know, no matter how far you've fallen, no matter how bad you've been, no matter how stubborn you are, that, you know, God is real and God loves you, and, you know, we are all in this together.
Well, you've been in the Lehigh Valley for the last 11 days, and you, on the 1st of March, hosted the Lehigh Valley Music Awards. How was that?
Oh, that was so much fun. Those people are so great. Dude, we're getting back to the art in the Lehigh Valley. Now, look, come on. Give me a break. So much viable talent here. We heard so many great performances there. So great, great performers. What sticks in my head is Ito and the Moonlight Hippies were one of the last groups to play. They were so great. The Aardvarks were there. Mm-hmm. I wish I could remember all the performers, but they were all terrific. There were some hip-hop kids out of Allentown, kids, young adults. They were great. I mean, it was a great day. And, you know, like in Getting Grace, we took music also. I didn't just take kids out of Lehigh Valley and adults out of Lehigh Valley and put them in the movie and extras. You know, we pulled the music. 80% of the music is from the Lehigh Valley, including the score, which was written by a guy who went to Allentown Central Catholic.
Fantastic.
Isn't that amazing? He's a big Hollywood composer, Alex Kovacs. I love this guy. But, you know, he grew up here in the Lehigh Valley.
Hmm. Interesting.
Amazing.
Well, with your varied career, one question is, do you prefer working in either TV, movies, or the streaming services in the new mediums?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, I'm very ecumenical in my work. I just love doing it. I even love auditioning. You know, we got back to the hotel late last night from, you know, a very long, successful day presenting A Channel of Peace to the world. And I still had to, an audition. So, by the way, you may think, why do you have to do an audition? I wonder that too. But the reality is I get maybe 80% of the work I get is a gift to me based on what I've done. But 20% is still, you know, I got to ask for it.
Right.
And I love it. I love it. Tammy, thank God I have a wife who's got a production company, so she can shoot and edit for me. And then we had Aaron McLean, our, you know, co-founder of A Channel of Peace, had never been done. I was like, here, read this. You're going to read these lines. And you're going to do this scene. And she was, so we put all this together in about 15 minutes and sent it off. And it was like, it was so great. It was so great to just be creating something. Mm-hmm. I love the theater. I've directed so much in the theater and act in the theater. Streaming and movies, they're kind of the same animal in that, you know, you generally shoot a single camera, you know, and move it around and recreate the scene a number of times. And, you know, the art is in maintaining consistency and in how we film it. Of course, the theater is so immediate. I love it. And streaming is like movies. And then the other thing is if you do a three-camera show, like they don't do a lot of them anymore, but, you know, most of the ones I've done have been, well, not most of them, I guess, but some of them have been on the Disney Channel.
Sorry. Wizards of Waverly Place.
Wizards of Waverly Place, one of your favorites, I'm sure.
Of course.
Ah, great people. It's funny, you know, here's where I might be a genius. Just, and this is through no design but luck. So, you know what? I've worked so consistently, great, but you could be like consistently work, but work on Mannix for 8 years, right? And then, you know, you got to fight the rest of your life to be remembered. So I, you know, as my Matlock fans are aging, my Disney Channel fans are coming up. Like I've always, the Lost guys are moving into middle age. I've always had this like an ongoing, you know, cyclical fan base because the stuff I do is so different and appeals to, you know, it's hard when you come from a movie like River's Edge or The Fugitive, and then you're going to do a Disney Channel show where they say, do more, do more, do more. And you're so used to not doing more. You know, I expect the president of SAG to come rip up my SAG card and slap me like Patton every time I do one of those shows because you're just pushing it so much. But, you know, that's what the kids want.
Well, that's interesting that through your very career, you've had the opportunity to put yourself in certain positions that get you a new audience. Do you feel that's key to your success, such as The Man with the High Castle or your recent voiceover acting with the video game Star Wars?
Yeah, I think absolutely. And by the way, let's just, you think that when they told me, I went to the audition, by the way, I auditioned for it. And, you know, in the middle of the audition, the character was saying, "You Templar Knights, I don't know what it is with you Templar Knights." And the director goes, Dan, let's do it again. I love it. But don't say Templar Knights, say Jedi Knights. And that's in the room is when I realized it was a Star Wars character.
Boom.
Boom. Boom. Now, they don't tell you that because they know you're an idiot. And if you know you're auditioning for Star Wars, because it had a fake name, Rowboat, if you knew you were auditioning for Star Wars, you'd be like, and you try to bring something, it would be too important to you.
You would manufacture a performance.
Right. You know, actors with this ideology that I'm sharing and the audition is a job, so just have a great audition. You have no control over anything else. You only have control of the audition. And, you know, up to the point where they want to take control. But so in the, you know, I just was so lucky to be in that. Yeah, I think that my fan base is always changing. And it's funny when people are, yesterday some kid who was there to, you know, watch the announcement when my wife said when he saw that it was me in Jedi Fallen Order, which he didn't know, she said the kid almost jumped out of his seat. She, you know, she just could see him where she was standing. Mm. It's so crazy. So, yeah, I think that's been very good for me.
What are some of your favorite attractions in the area? Restaurants or, you know, kind of places of your youth?
Well, you know, we're within, you know, if I could throw a baseball from where we're sitting, I could hit one of the three great hot dog restaurants, of course. I always say Pete's, Potts, and Yakko's. I'm putting them in no order because I will never say which one I love the most, but I love them all the best. Nice. They're all terrific. We go, do you know where I go often when I'm here? I go to Roadside America.
Really?
I love Roadside America. Well, it's in Getting Grace. You know, I love it so much it's in Getting Grace. And go Roadside America, folks, you know, that is a crown jewel. That is a magical place here near your Lehigh Valley. And I go out to Wild West City. I know that's not in Lehigh Valley, but we love that too, in Netcong, New Jersey.
Mm-hmm. When was the last time you got a haircut by Denny down on Broad Street?
Denny, 4 days ago.
Nice.
Denny Roebuck, my cousin. Are you a Denny client?
No, but Neil goes.
Neil goes to Denny? Yeah. Denny Roebuck, I love this guy. Here's my Denny story. One day I call him 4 years ago, I guess it was. I go, Denny, oh my gosh, Denny, my cousin, my favorite cousin, haircutter, cousin. Yeah, what do you need? I said, yeah, I got a big press conference, and I got to get a haircut. And I'm going to run in there. Can you just cut my hair quick before the press conference? He goes, Dan, first come, first served.
Family.
That's my family.
I remember you personally from your Matlock days.
Oh, you're much too young.
Yeah. Any stories about Andy Griffin?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I'm a kid. I'm watching the Andy Griffin Show all the time. We all watched the Andy Griffin Show and thought, why isn't my dad like that? You know, my dad was more like Herman Munster. No offense, Dad. But Herman Munster's a great dad, by the way. If you watch those shows, he's one of the greatest TV dads. Although he's silly, he did love Eddie very much. Being on Matlock there's no words for that. It was three glorious years. I'd go to work in the morning and Andy would say, Danny, make this funny. What are we going to do? What's going on? It was just collaboration and love and appreciation.
How many copies of his suit were there?
Oh, he had, every year he probably had five suits made every year. So, and they were on for 9 years. I have one of the suits. Yeah, I asked for one of the suits when we were done. So they gave me one of his stunt suits. So great. By the way, do you know why he wore the same suit every day?
Why?
He learned a lesson on the Andy Griffith Show. That if he wore his sheriff outfit, he didn't have, every time they shot another scene, he didn't have to go change. Same thing, Columbo, Monk, this is how they do it. So they don't have to keep track of what the character was wearing constantly. Andy, they come in and give him another tie. So he always laughed because that is not how Cliff dressed. My closet had like 20 suits.
Last question, what is Hinky?
Hinky, that's Hinky. You know, Hinky is that thing that people think is something, but it's weird. And they think it's not weird, but it's Hinky. That's what Hinky is.
Danny Roebuck, thank you so much for your time today. Coming back into the area and WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio. This is James Johnson with One to One.
Thank you so much, James. I appreciated every moment of this.